Okay to go. Yes. And now. Welcome, everybody. This is the ASO workshop. My name is Louis Lee. I'm the chair of the ASO Address Council. I'm just walking behind here and making everybody nervous. If I may get a show of hands of who are kind of newcomers in that don't know all that much about the processes inside the RIRs, the structure, what the ASO does. There's a peanut gallery in the front. So everybody in the back can explain to me and then can present these slides for me? Right? No? I like to ask our presenters to make the presentation valuable to you so that if this is stuff you've heard before, we don't need to tell you again. If this is new stuff to you, I'd love to be able to tell you what it is. So let me know if we want to just, move on. All right. With us up here is Carlos Reyes, our support from ICANN staff today, this week. Alan Barrett, one of our vice chairs. And Nirish is not around right now, our other vice chairs. We have Tomohiro Fujisaki, one of our AC members who has items to talk to you about on the ITU working group. And Elise Garrett from IANA, who is here to let you know about what's going on with the IANA public consultation. So if I may have Alan go ahead and start, and I'll just hand everything over to Alan.
Okay, thank you, Louis. This is Alan Barrett, and welcome to the ASO workshop at this 46th ICANN meeting in Beijing. We've got a fairly short agenda today. I'm going to speak a little bit about what the ASO is and how the policy development process works. Then Elise Gerick is going to speak about the status of the IANA public consultation process. Tomohiro Fujisaki is going to lead a discussion on what the ITU is doing in their consultations about IPv4 address space. And then I'll open the floor for an open discussion. But please feel free to ask questions at any time. All right, so first about the ASO and the number resource policy development process. The ASO is constituted in terms of an MOU between ICANN and the NRO. The NRO is the Numbering Resource Organization, which is a loose group for coordination between the five regional internet registries. And in terms of the MOU with ICANN, the NRO fulfills the roles and responsibilities of the ICANN ASO. Okay, so the ASO is an ICANN-supporting organization, but the NRO was organized outside ICANN, but there's an MOU that ties the two together, says that the same things are done, automatically by them. Within the NRO, there's a numbers council, and that's basically congruent to the ASO address council. It's consists of 15 members, and it's responsible for sort of overseeing the global policy development process. All the way from proposal of the policy through discussion in the five regions and until eventual adoption by the ICANN board. So when a global policy is initiated, it's placed on the agenda for discussion in all five regions, and it gets discussed in the regions according to their own policies within each region. Global policies are defined as policies impacting on number resources which have the agreement of all five RIRs and which also require specific action or outcome on the part of the IANA. Or other ICANN-related bodies, but in practice, it's almost always going to be the IANA. So the Address Council consists of 15 members. We've got five regions, and each of the five regions appoints or elects three members to the ASO Address Council. And what it does is to oversee global policy development, as I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, and also several other ICANN-related actions, appoints two directors to the ICANN board, serves on any other ICANN bodies as required. So, for example, NOMCOM, the review team, and any other ICANN committees that might come up from time to time. And also, if the ICANN board wants advice on number resource matters, then the place they should look for that advice is the ASO Address Council. So a big part of the job is the global policy development process, which is based on these principles of openness, transparency, and bottom-up development. Each RIR does things in detail in their own ways, but they're all based on the same principles. There are open mailing lists where anybody can discuss policies or propose new policies. There are open public policy meetings where anybody can participate. It's transparent in that everything is documented. And it's a bottom-up process in that the policies are initiated by members of the community, not by boards or committees or anything like that. So the different people and organizations play different roles in this process. The community, which means anybody and everybody, can submit proposals and discuss them. When consensus is reached, if there's general agreement within a particular region that a policy should go forward, then somebody has to decide that consensus exists and that details differ. In some regions, it's done by an advisory council. In other regions, it's done by a policy working group or a policy special interest group. Each of the five RIRs has a board who is responsible for fiduciary oversight and oversight of the policy development process, but they don't dictate the policy. They simply make sure that the process is followed. In some regions, also, the board ratifies the policy. And then the RIRs have staff who would implement the policy and conduct assessments of the impact of new proposals. So, you know, proposal to change how things are done, the staff would figure out how much impact that would have on their operations. Now, I'm going to speak about the policy development process in a little bit more detail. I'm going to skip on to the next slide while I talk about what's on this slide. Oh, sorry, no, I'm not. That comes later. Okay, so within each region, the details differ, but they all have these basic principles that policies are initiated by the community, they're discussed by the community, both on an open mailing list and in an open public policy meeting. When or if there's consensus within the region, within the community, that a policy should go forward, then somebody makes a call and says, yes, consensus exists. After that, there's a last call process, which gives the community a final chance to raise objections or to voice their support. So if they think there was a mistake, that somebody said there's consensus but there isn't really, then the last call gives the community a chance to raise that kind of concern. Then the policy will be adopted or ratified. Different regions use different language to talk about essentially the same process. And finally, it would be implemented. Now, I've been talking about the policy development process for each region. The global policy development process follows roughly the same steps, but all five regions will simultaneously discuss the policies in the way that I've just described within their region. And if all five regions can come to an agreement about the policy going forward, then the ASO Address Council looks at the proposal, verifies that the right process was followed, verifies that any significant concerns raised by the community have been taken into account, and if everything looks fine, then the ASO Address Council will pass the policy on to the ICANN board, and the ICANN board ratifies it. So the essential difference between global policies and regional policies is basically a few extra steps for global policies. We follow the regional process, but we also do a little bit extra of making sure that the same text is approved in all regions and passing it on to the ICANN board. All right. So anybody can participate. You can go to the ASO website, aso.icann.org, and you can look for news. When new global policies are proposed, there'll be a news item about that. Right now, there are no global policy proposals on the table. But sometimes there are, and then it'll appear on the ASO address site. You can participate in your region. So you can subscribe to your RIR's policy mailing list. If you don't know how to get there, then follow some links from the ASO website. From the ASO website, you should be able to find links to each RIR. Choose the RIR which is relevant to your region. Go to its website and look around for links to the policy mailing list. You can subscribe there. You can participate in the policy discussions. And you don't have to live in the region. You can comment on policies which are under discussion in other regions other than where you live. That's perfectly fine. You can attend the open meetings which the RIRs hold. Some have one a year, several have two a year, and some have, I think only one has three a year. So you can go to the meeting and participate, and there might be a fee to participate in the meeting, and obviously you'll have travel costs. But apart from that, it's open participation. And they do usually have remote access as well, so you can participate online. All right. Are there any questions about what I've just talked about, what the ASO is and the policy development process?
Thank you, Alan. I'll be happy to walk the mic around for anybody that has questions. And I'm going to start walking from the back. Or any input from the front? Okay. We'll move on. Thank you.
Okay. So, Elise, please, could we move on to your part of the...
Certainly. Who controls the slides? Oh, you do, Carlos. Thank you. So, looking around the room, I think there's about 25 of us in the room, and 80% of us meet regularly at RIR meetings and ICANN meetings and other places. So some of this is probably very familiar. What I'd really like to do is see if you have any input on some of the consultations that the NRO did not reply to, because there are some that are not just numbers. They're things like customer service things and things like that. And it'd be nice if you have input, now that we're in this small informal gathering, that you could share with me, and we could take that back and officially record it. So, Carlos, if we could go to the next slide. So what I am going to talk about is the IANA functions contract and the deliverables that we have to offer public consultations on several different topics, many of which are near and dear to your heart and have to do with internet numbers. So we're going to talk about what's gone on before. Those are the ones that have been posted, and the public consultations have already closed. But that doesn't mean you can't still give comments. It just means that the formal time frame is closed, and what public consultations are coming up, and then the fact that we'd really encourage participation and feedback. This is a real formal channel which allows us to work with NTIA in compliance with our contract to implement things. So next slide, please. So it's an eye chart for me, too, because that little screen down there is hard to read. But this is just the IANA page that shows that there were four public consultations. I'm going to walk through them one by one. Next slide, please. So one of the ones that has closed, this slide shows what the dates were, and I don't have good enough vision to be able to read them. But the public consultation has closed, though we are still encouraging comments if you have them. It's about the customer service complaint resolution process. And if you go to the next slide, please. So basically, this process was developed in 2006 with input from the community. That means you guys plus other people. And we only received five comments from the entire global stakeholder community. And the key inputs for that were that most people didn't know it existed, that we even had an escalation process or a customer service complaint resolution process. So one of the things, of course, that we'll be looking at is trying to figure out how to let people know if they want to complain. This is the best way to do it and probably to get a resolution. And there was some very good comments about reporting on the process and how many complaints we get, what the resolutions would be. But since hardly anyone knew there is a process, we've only got one formal complaint over the last 7 years through this process. That's not to say people don't complain, but in a formal fashion, we only had one. So I think we've got some work to do to raise, not that we want complaints, but so that people know there is a way to complain and there is a process that can be followed and there should be a resolution at the end of the process and that we should report on the fact that there were complaints and there were resolutions one way or another. Okay, next slide, please. Another consultation process that we did receive feedback on, and the numbers community has not been as engaged in this, but it is a very hot topic with TLDs, top-level domains. And that's the delegation and redelegation and the performance standards that are related to that. And so if you'll go to the next slide, please. So this is also a consultation process that has closed, and we had seven comments received. Three of them came from one organization, ALAC. They had a very interesting process for making their comments. They did it iteratively. So they would collect some, submit them, and collect some others. So it really is four organizations in those seven comments. And I've listed, you know, the other organizations. Performance standards are one of the deliverables that we have for all the IANA functions. And so you'll see this now for the number system, CCTLDs, GTLDs, and protocol parameters. All right, next one, Carlos, please. So this one's GTLDs, and if we could go to the next slide. Basically, there were three comments. All three of these were ALACs. And as they basically referred their comments to both CCTLDs and GTLDs at the same time and did feel there should be different performance standards for the both, the CCTLDs and the GTLDs. And I don't know if you're interested, but I'll tell you anyway, that the reason there were differences is the GTLDs have much more formal contractual arrangements and have to go through a whole series of panel evaluations before they can even be acknowledged to be a string that is eligible to be a TLD. And the CCTLDs have different set of policies and overarching oversight rules, and so there's a different set, a different channel for processing those requests for changes. So that's why there are different standards that probably will be implemented. Next one, please. So this one is the one that I think is probably the most interest to you all in the room, and that's performance standards for the Internet number resources. And this has closed, if you'll go to the next slide. And we did receive three comments. Our three organizations submitted comments, one including the NRO. And the question at the top are some of the questions that were asked within the public comment period. And some of the key inputs I have put on the slide, one is to offer clarifying definitions for some things. A second, and I suspect this is one that we should have done a long time ago. We shouldn't have waited to be told about it, but it's nice to have it formally submitted, is that there are KPIs, key performance indicators, for the implementation of policies. So, for instance, once a global policy is adopted, and Alan talked about what that process is, and once the ICANN board has adopted the global policy, what are the implementation milestones, and publishing that and giving regular updates to the community of where we are in implementing the policy. And then the last one is publishing computer-friendly formats as well as human-readable formats. Those are primarily all input from the NRO, and we thank you very much. And I'll pause here to let the interactive part take place in case any of you in the audience think of things in performance standards you'd like to see. I mean, I know the NRO speaks for the RIRs as a community. However, we do encourage individual contributions also. And I don't know if there are other things that you all off the top of your head would like to offer up in this small, intimate gathering that we have here today. I won't attribute it to anyone's name.
And when I hand you the mic, you may identify yourself as either yourself or someone else, I guess.
Yeah, you could all say you're Louis Lee.
I'll have to give you my hat.
Okay, Naresh.
It's a suggestion, right? If really one wants to enhance the usage, one should really entertain complaints with a favorable response. There have been examples in the past where business guys have, despite knowing that, okay, that complaint is not genuine, it is a fake, they have really given them a reward of saying, okay, you have a complaint, let me just give you the whatever you are looking for. I think it really helps. Matter of fact, you know, in both the situations, I'm finding that the usage can go up by similar kind of a approach, which is more like a business approach. Right.
Thank you very much. And on that manner, we will give Naresh one of these little giveaways for asking a question. And I'm not going to tell anyone what they are. You have to ask a question to find out.
Thank you.
I know this crowd so well, right? Oops, there's a hand in the back. I'm not going to tell. You'll have to find out.
Here you go, Adam.
I have more than two.
Hello, Elise. It's Adam Gosling from APNIC. I'm not doing this just to get the goodie. orthogonal to your request for comments, I was in the David Olive's session, Policy versus Implementation, and earlier this morning, and Marika put up a big slide with a implementation framework that ICANN had been working on. I wonder if you could... I wonder what work had been done in the IANA in regard to that, or if there was any planned.
So we have not been as engaged with the policy team on the implementation framework as probably we should have been, but we are following it and definitely will try to leverage their work. As you know, the global policies have been, I think the global policies actually are on a kind of a faster track. You may not think so sometimes when you're trying to make the global policy from the five RIR individual policies, but I think that we've had more global policies and more experience there than and have worked with you hand in hand all along. So maybe I should be asking for a favorable comment on that through the complaint system or something, but if you don't think that's true, please let me know. And so we're not participating explicitly in the policy team's implementation framework, but we are following it and we'll leverage what they do. And if you pass this man his giveaway, do I have any more questions?
So we should submit a complaint saying that you're too efficient, make the rest of your organization look bad?
No, I don't think that's the case. It's just that, you know, it's kind of like everyone develops at their own timeline. If there are no more questions, can I have the next slide, please? So, all right. Another consultation that we had out there was secure notification process, and it also has closed. If you go to the next slide, Carlos. Basically, these are for mechanisms for communicating planned outages, maintenance windows, things that are of interest to the community that serves us. For instance, if you want to go online and you're looking for some registry in a protocol parameters area or in the IPv4 registry area, and it's not there, and you'll go, oh, wonder what happened to IANA this day. What we'd like is to make sure that we have a secure way of notifying the relevant stakeholders, and that would be the RIR operational people, or the IETF operational people, or the CCTLD operational people when we have planned maintenance and when we have emergency outages, say if there were, God forbid, an earthquake in California or something, or a hurricane in the East Coast. So we had two comments, and the one comment was someone trying to sell us something, and the well, you know, it's a good try, good marketing. And the other comment was that they were satisfied with the way we communicate with them. So I didn't know if you had any feeling about that as RIR members, whether you've had any issue there or not. I will pause. Okay, if we can go to the next slide, please, Carlos. So basically, those are the ones that have closed. There's one that is open that's not an upcoming but wasn't on our slide deck, but I think I should make sure you're aware of it in case the NRO hasn't flagged it. It didn't have a keyword or something. We are right now have a consultation out for the DNSSEC key rollover. So when we worked almost 5 years ago now with the community and the government to the U.S. government to sign the root, there was a requirement at that point in time that we consider and try to do at least one key rollover in 5 years. And I don't believe that it's been done to the root. In fact, I know it hasn't been done to the root yet. And so this consultation is to the community to get feedback on potential operational issues that might they might consider important, experience they may have had in key rollovers of, say, if you also run a TLD or a different domain tier. So I think that that would be really good feedback for the RIR community. I know that you all are multitasking in many ways. You do things with numbers and names. So the DNSSEC key rollover might be a consultation where you'd like to make some input. So that one is right now open, and I think it closes sometime in early May. But the upcoming ones, there's some clauses within the contract that we have with the U.S. government to get public consultations on identification of the source policies against which implementations are done. And so this is to your question, Adam. You know, we do have the marriage of policy and implementation and how they go together. And, you know, obviously implementation should respect the policy, and policy should try to make sure that they're implementable. So this is going to be one consultation that will have identification of the source policies, and then it'll have accompanying user instructions. This is focused at people who would be submitting requests for, say, change requests to the domain name, or asking for the RIRs asking for addresses, or the IETF asking us to assign multicast addresses, things of that nature. And this would be publication and updating of instructions that we currently have. And the final point is the dashboard. So that would be taking some of the performance standards responses in other consultations and looking at how the community feels that they would be best So it would be visual, so you could see dashboards and see the information without having to read long documents and things like that. So those are upcoming consultations, and I think this concludes my presentation. Will you go to the next slide, please? Yes. So I'm asking for questions or input or comments on anything you may have just heard. Yes, Hans-Petter.
To you, Hans-Petter, just a moment.
Well, thank you. Hans-Petter Holin on the Address Console. Just thinking about how to promote your complaints process in a positive way is to change this from a complaints process to a feedback process. To a feedback process, so that you would take both positive and negative feedback and even suggestions for improvement, so that you could actually have three categories. I mean, my experience from this is implementing ISO 20000 in my home organization, so you can find some pointers there. I can share them with you if you want that. And another way to further do it is to, on every ticket you interact with, have a user satisfaction survey at the end. Very simple. Give a feedback from 1 to 10, and if it's less than 7, you would, or less than 6 or something, you would always follow up to see what can you improve. And you do that sort of on the team manager level or something like that. Then you would get an interactive process with people at the other end and sort out all the tiny bits like unclear documentation and so on. That is very easy to fix, and you would improve gradually over time. So that could be a suggestion in order to get sort of promoted this process in a positive way, so to speak. Thank you.
Yeah, I really appreciate that. Thank you. I know internally we had thought of potentially having, you know, if you use Skype, when you get off a Skype call, often you'll get that one little survey. We thought about doing that for tickets. We didn't get any other comments like that, but that's a good one. And I think your concept of changing the process and calling it feedback instead of complaint, because complaint does kind of set a perspective in your mind that you have to have a complaint. You're not giving positive feedback. You're only giving negative. But thank you. And I may ask you to write that down and send it in to me. Thanks. And any other questions? Oh, he gets his token. Yes, yes. His
prize for the AC people.
Just
we have another question.
Okay. And if this is Louis, I might say that in one of the earlier sessions of the IANA consultation, we had some input to where how you might also promote this is just a little blurb at the bottom of in your SIG. Say, how are we doing? And includes a link to just for feedback. And you'll find that people want to give feedback, you know, especially when it looks like you're asking for it.
Alain Bidron, I wasn't aware of those consultations. So were these consultations announced on the regional mailing list?
Maybe Wilbur can answer, but I know they were announced on the ICANN page, and Leo Vigoda for ICANN did contact each RIR and let them know that we had consultations pending. Yeah. So, but Wilbur, you...
The key role was mentioned at least twice on the list in our region.
Okay, and we have another giveaway.
Woo. Well, that was not...
That was a question about ASO activities. Who made you policeman?
That was confusion from one of my members.
Does he get one for that feedback?
No, because he led to the confusion. That's feedback, not complaints, right? Okay. Do we have any other comments or questions? Yes, Kat? Now.
Wait a minute. No, I'm
you okay?
So, did I break something? Oh. Okay. So anyway, if there are no more questions from the audience, or friends, I guess I should call you all just friends, because we meet in friendly places lots of times. Thank you very much for your time and for the feedback. It's been very useful to get the comments that we hadn't received online. Thanks.
Thank you, Lisa.
Yep. Okay. Thank you very much, Elise, for that report. And I'm sure the recipients of the goodies will thank you for those too. Now, Tomohiro Fujisaki will speak about some of the things going on in the ITU.
Okay, thank you, Aram. And my name is Tomohiro Fujisaki, and SOS member from EPNIC. So here, I'll speak about the ITU consultation issues. Okay, next, please. And now, ITU Council Working Group Internet has seeking input for the about the internet policy issues. You can see the content, and you can submit submit your views from this URL. And the purpose of this presentation is to promote ICANN community to submit the views for the internet policies. And so that I provide some information about related to the ICANN consultation, especially in the IP address policy issue. Next, please. This slide shows the top page of the consultation. Here you can see that this time three issues from the ITU. Next, please. I copied the text from this web page, and ITU now seeking the input for these 3 points. One is the spam issues, and second point is the IPv4 address policy issues, and third point is the internet deployment issues. And here is a workshop, so I target on the second point, the IPv4 address issues. And about these issues, ITU seeking comment on the usage of the legacy IPv4 address and the inter-RIR transfer issues. And next few slides, I'll explain about these two issues. And before that, I'll explain about the legacy IPv4 address, but maybe all of you know this. Yes, I explain briefly. And the legacy IP address space is that space that distributed by the central registry. Here, central registry is a registry that was formerly distributed IPv4 address before current RIR distribution structure established. And the number of the legacy address space is 91/8. About one third of the total space. And this time ITU consultation is target on this space. Next, please. Okay. And this slide shows the usage of the IPv4 address space. From this URL, IANA URL, you can check the which IPv4 address space is a legacy space, and the user and or the maintainer of that legacy address space. And the next point is this is not limited to the legacy address space, but the currently unused IPv4 address space have been returned to IANA through the IRR. And these IPv4 addresses will redistributed under the global policy ratified by the ICANN board last year. And you can see the policy in detail from this URL. And if you have interest in the policy in detail, please show this URL. And next, please. And about the IPv4 address transfer. The first point is not the inter-RIR transfer, but the country for RIRs, APNIC, ERIN, LIPE, and LACNIC has implemented the intra-RIR transfer policy. So unused IPv4 address can transfer to the to other organizations into these regions. And in APNIC and ERIN have adapted their inter-RIR transfer policy, so the IPv4 address holders in the ERIN and APNIC can transfer their IPv4 address between this area. And you can check the policy text from these URLs, including the criteria for transfer. And in fact, there are already several IPv inter-RL IPv4 address transfer has conducted. And you can check the transfer records from this URL. And this inter-RL transfer policy is under discussion in LACNIC region and LIPE region. And in AFRINIC region, this inter-RL policy was proposed but did not reach the consensus in AFRINIC region. Okay, as I explained, the 2 points, unused legacy address space, IPv4 address space, and the inter-RL transfer policy has tackled in RL community. Okay, next, please. And back to the ITU consultation. This consultation began last January, and currently two comments are submitted. One comment is for issue 2, IP address issues, and another comment is for issue 3, internet deployment issues. And this is the comment for the issue 2, and the contributor of this comment do not happy with such activity in ITU, as you can see. Okay, next please. Okay, this is the last slide. And this is the current status of IPv4 address space policy related to the ITU consultation. And currently, unused legacy IPv4 address can be returned to INR or the RIRs, and or that space can be transferred to another organization, intra and inter-RL policy. And I hope this information is help to you to submit your comments to the ITU. Okay, this is end of my presentation. And if you have any questions or additional information for this consultation, please speak up. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Tomohiro-san. His urge is for all of you, meaning what you see up there, all of us in ICANN, to submit our views to the ITU. But go ahead and do so individually, and perhaps maybe fix that one typo, change R to your, because it didn't match your first slide with the purpose.
Hello, I'm Paul Rundeck from the RIPE NCC. I have a comment to make to this. We are working currently. There's a process even before we would get to this meeting. But thank you very much for bringing this forward. This was a very nice rundown of what's going on in a space outside of the current circles we operate in. We do operate together with them, but not as close as we do as the people here in this room. Before this, we will see a submission that you'll see coming from the RARs to the WTPF, which is the World Telecommunications Policy Forum, which covers a few of the points that are raised in this consultation for the ITU Council Working Group. What I can say is that the RARs will be working together, and we will make a formal submission to the points brought forward, especially point number 2 here. So, yes, of course, we always encourage our membership and our communities in the RIPE. I can speak for the RIPE NCC here. We always encourage our membership and our community to engage in these sorts of processes and support and give your viewpoint. To support what your viewpoints would be, but I can say that we will have a formal submission from the RARs. Thank you.
Thank you.
And no, this is.
Thank you for comment.
Enjoy, Paul.
You're fantastic.
I snuck it under the table too.
Anyone else?
Thank you, Louis. Kathy Henley with the Aaron RAR. Just in case everyone doesn't understand the purpose of the consultation that's being done. The council, the full long name of this group is the ITU Council Working Group on International Internet Public Policy Related Issues. It's huge. The most important part to know, though, is that it is only open to member states. So we're kind of hoping, with our fingers crossed, that this is a positive action by the member states instead of assuming they know how everything's done and the status. They're asking questions. So to what Paul said, Tomohiro, everyone here has said, it's really important to get your voice heard out there because they are actually asking for input. Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. Anyone else? I'm just handling the Q&A part. Back to you, Alan.
Okay. Thank you, Tomohiro. Thank you to everybody for your questions. That concludes the prepared presentations for this meeting. We have another 15 minutes, closer to, no, 10 minutes. So I'll open the floor to any questions or comments related to addressing policies or the organizations involved with them.
Any thoughts back here? Do you want to ask a question off the audience? Just to put you on the spot? Should I put me one on the spot? She's good.
All right, so I see one question from the audience. Adam.
Hello, it's Adam Gosling from AP Nick again. Sorry to put you on the spot, Elise. How is the global policy implementation going?
Actually, we do have a timeline. And it is going well in the sense that we have a timeline. And so it should be finished. What are we now in April? Is that right? It should be the registry and the tool for that should be ready by early summer. But, yes, that leads to, I think, one of the pertinent questions, or not comment questions, but comments that we received in the performance standards, how it's much more important that we commit to a plan and some milestones once there's a policy and that we have an implementation plan, then we communicate it better with the community. And I think that came in as one of the comments on the consultations. And we had a public consultation on what the registry should look like, but that closed well in the fall. And so our communication has been lax, and we took the comment to heart. But we will try to publish. We won't try. We will publish the timeline so you have a better information, and we'll put it on the website.
And if I may ask something out of the audience, just a little background on this. The ASO review had taken place some time ago, and one of the recommendations is that we make this ASO workshop be more relevant to the ICANN community. We canceled the workshop last meeting to start revamping how we do this. I hope that you found this session a little more valuable, but I want to hear some feedback, what you think of this session, what you want to hear from future sessions, how we might want to make this more relevant to you, more interesting to you. What do you want to hear from us? Don't want to hear anything from us. Excellent. Giveaways. What do you want from us? Oh, giveaways. That's what it was. Okay.
Let's see. You may submit your feedback to us. Probably best via our secretariat, who can compile all the information for us. The email address would be secretariat@aso.icann.org. You might find such contact information at our website, aso.icann.org. Right, Mr. Secretary Herman Valdez? He confirms. Great. Okay. Well, would you like to close, Alan?
Yes, okay. Thanks, Louis. Right, so we're a few minutes early, and I think that's probably good. I don't want to overstay our time in this room. Thanks to everybody for your attendance, especially the newcomers. There are lots of faces that I've seen many times before, but I do see a few newcomers, and I'm glad that you came. And we would like to hear your feedback to the Secretariat about how we can improve our feedback to the ICANN community. Also, finally, with thanks to our presenters, Elise and Tomohiro. Thanks, everybody.
And please do stay for the IPv6 session, co-hosted by APNIC and ICANN.